Perek Tesvav, the very end, Pasuk Samach Gimel, says, V'yizivusi Yosher Yerushalayim. Tesvav, yeah. Tesvav Samach Gimel. V'yizivusi Yosher Yerushalayim lo yachlu b'nei Yehuda lo risham. The Yavusi, those who lived in Yerushalayim, b'nei Yehuda were not able to drive them out. V'yishav Yavusi is b'nei Yehuda v'Yerushalayim ad yom hazeh. The Yavusi lived with the people of Yehuda in Yerushalayim up until that day. Now, the reason why they didn't kick out the Yavusim was not because the Yavusim were too strong for them to defeat. It's not that Yehuda looked at Yavusim and were like, oh, they're too strong, we can't deal with it. These Yavusim were the descendants, don't worry, these Yavusim were the descendants of Avimelech. Samach Gimel, very end. So they were the descendants of Avimelech. Avimelech, the king of Gror, had made a shvuah with Avram that Avram would never hurt his kids and Avimelech would never hurt Avram's kids. Because they made that deal, then even though later on many, many years had passed, still Yehuda did not feel like they were going to kill the Yavusim. They offered the Yavusim to leave. When they didn't leave, they knew they couldn't kill them because they had the bris with them. So instead, they ended up, they taxed them and they made them give taxes instead. Outside of the area where the Yavusim lived, they put up two statues. One was deaf, right? And the other one was blind, I'm sorry, and the other one was lame. The blind statue represented Yitzchak Avinu, the lame statue represented Yaakov Avinu. It was making fun of the Jews that you can't fight us. When David HaMelech wanted to take over Yerushalayim many years later, 400 years later, the first thing he did is he went up to those two statues, destroyed them, and then went in and destroyed the Yavusim. Why didn't the bris still last? Because the Yavusim had already broken it earlier, so therefore David HaMelech did not feel they had to keep it up.
Yeah. Why couldn't they get like a hetzer?
To kill right now?
Yeah.
So apparently they didn't, which is a little bit strange that they didn't get anything whatsoever to kill everybody. Right, but this was not. And I guess because they weren't ready to take over the city of Yerushalayim yet anyway. Remember, they didn't know where the Beis Hamikdash was going to be yet. So they had no idea. Well, so they didn't have a hetzer for it. So they didn't. No, David HaMelech had to paskin later on. Up until now, they were going to go to Shiloh, which we'll talk about soon, right? But they didn't know where it was going to be exactly. Okay, Perek Tes Zayin, Pasuk Aleph. Now, Perek Tes Zayin. Vayetzal Gor lefnei Yosef miyardin yirichu lebe yirichu mizracha mibar oyla miyirichu bahar beis el. So again, the lot came up with the descendants of Yosef Atzadik from the Jordan, right by Yericho, all the way to the spring of Yericho, to the east, right by the desert that goes up from Yericho, by the mountains, by Beis El. V'yotun Beis El Luza, it went all the way to Luz. V'avrol gvul ha'arki ataros, and then it went all the way to this border over there. V'yard yamal gvul ha'yafleti, it went west to the border of the Yafleti, ad gvul Beis Chorona, tachton, v'ad gozer, v'yototos of yamal, went all the way to the Yam itself. V'yachal ben Yosef, Menashe v'Ephraim. This was the territory that was split between Menashe and Ephraim. Now, it was Yosef's chelek, but it was split between Menashe and Ephraim itself. As we'll see, it was drawn into two different portions. This was a very large area. In fact, by far the largest area that was given to any of the Shvatim. The total amount that was given to Menashe and Ephraim is so huge. Very, very good. We'll look at it right over here in the map. Let's see if we can find it. Where is this? Here we go, right over here. Just look at the area right over here. The total amount, it took up the middle area of Eretz Yisrael and was huge. Even though Yehuda had quite a bit on the bottom, if you add in the area that Menashe got on the other side of the Jordan River, Menashe and Ephraim got by far the biggest part.
Why didn't Reuben get the biggest part? Wouldn't he get a double portion?
Because it was given away to Yosef at Tzadik. It was taken away because of Chalo Yitzui Aviv, when he moved around the bed of his father. So it was taken away and given over to Yosef instead. So therefore, this is given over to him. So now we're going to go through the Gevul B'nai Ephraim. We're going to run through a little bit. V'yigvul B'nai Ephraim, L'mishpachos Makor Nefraim, V'yigvul Nachalosim, Mizracha Atros Adar Ad Beis Choron Elyon, from the east, Atros Adar until Beis Choron, V'yata Gevul Ayama, Hamech Masos, right, all the Mitzafon, V'nasav Gevul Mizracha, went to the east, Hanas Shiloh, V'avros Mizrach, Mimizrach Yanoicha. V'nasav Yemi Yanoicha, Ataros, went to Naros, Ataros V'na'arosa, Ufagab Yericho, V'yata Yarden, Mitapoch Yel Gevul Yama, went to the west, Nachol Kanav, Ahitosos V'ayama, Zos Nachlos Mat V'nei Ephraim, V'shvachosam, that was all the areas right over there. Now, it is interesting, Ephraim comes first. Normally, you'd go with the Bechor. Menashe was older than Ephraim, but as we all know, Yaakov Avinu switched his arms and gave the bracha to Ephraim before he did to Menashe. It's possible that that's the reason why Ephraim is mentioned first, because he's the more chash of Shevet. Yoshua, after all, came from Ephraim. There were great men that came from Menashe. Gidon would be an example, but Ephraim was more chash because of Yoshua itself over here. If you'll notice, there's a line called Tanas Shiloh. The reason why it's called Tanas Shiloh is almost like we're sad about Shiloh itself. Shiloh was the area where the Mishkan was placed. Not the Mishkan that they had in the Midbar. That was always meant to be temporary. They made it more of a permanent structure of of a Mishkan, and they put it out there, and they made it stone and full wood and everything, and it lasted 369 years altogether. It's pretty awesome altogether. But that was the actual Mishkan, and it could be seen from many, many miles. It lasted for those years. It was destroyed when Eli's sons, Hophni and Pinchas, took up the Aron Kodesh in the war against the Pelishim themselves, and it was destroyed. When it was destroyed, people mourned it like they did the Beis HaMikdash being destroyed. It was only the Mishkan, but they mourned it completely. And therefore, they called it Ta'anas Shiloh, the mourning of Shiloh, the sadness that they had for Shiloh itself. What did it look like? It was not a real building like the Beis HaMikdash itself. The walls may have been stone, but it still had curtains and skins like they had over there. It was very, very different from everything else that they had up until now. Okay, next, guys. Pasuk Tetzvah, Arim HaMivdolz Vnei Ephraim B'Zokh Nachlo B'Nei Asha Kol Arim V'Chatzrayim. There were cities that were separate, and they were in the Nachlo of Menashe. There were certain cities and areas around them. V'lohu Rishuas Kanani Yoshe B'Guzer. They did not drive out the Kanani that were living in Guzer. Yeshua Kanani B'Kavar Ephraim Adi Amazeve Yilam Asa Yved. They were taxed, but they were not destroyed. That is a horrible thing. This is a big-time muster over to Ephraim. How could you not get rid of all of them completely? And because you didn't get rid of the Canaan completely, unfortunately, the Canaan eventually became strong enough to fight back. That was a bad thing, even though they had them taxed. Perek Yud Zayin, everybody. Quick Perek. Vayyeh Goro L'matzav V'Menashe. Now we have the Goro for Menashe. Kiyu B'chor Yosef. He was the B'chor of Yosef. L'machir B'chor Menashe Avi Gilad. Kiyu Aya Ish Mocham. He was a man of war over here, Machir. Vayyelo Gilad V'Abashan. He was given the Gilad. And the Bashan. The reason why Machir went first, he was the firstborn. That's number one. Number two, he was a massive warrior. So he went first before anybody else in order to conquer his land. That's how awesome he was when it went through. So Menashe was put after Ephraim. Machir was mentioned first, and therefore he's mentioned over here. In fact, they named cities after Machir ben Menashe. He may have lived a very, very long time as well. Pasuk Beis. Vayu levnei Menashe anosur levnei Mishpachos levnei Abiezer levnei Chelik levnei Asriel levnei Shechem levnei Chefer levnei Shmida Eil levnei Menashe ben Yosef Aschar levnei Mishpachos. Those are the male children of Menashe according to their families. Letzlafad ben Chefer ben Gila ben Machir ben Menashe. Tzlafchad loy labanakim banos. We all know he only had daughters. He did not have sons. Deilish Moshe ben Yosef Machlan Noah Chaglam Milka Vesiritzav Etigram levnei Elazar Akom levnei Yoshua ben Nun. They came in front of Elazar Cohen in front of Yoshua ben Nun, still alive. It was a while. They must have been older. Looking at Nisim, Lamor, and they came in front of the Nisim, saying, Hashem Tzivos Moshe L'Seslanu Nachla B'Silchachenu. Hashem commanded Moshe to give us a Nachla within our brothers. V'itzelem al pi Hashem, Nachla B'Silchachavihen. We were given a certain inheritance. There were 10 portions of Menashe altogether, aside from the outside of Eretz Yisrael part, the part on the other side of the Jordan River. Because the daughters of Menashe got a full Nachla, Eretz Gilad has lived in Menashe no Sarim. The land of the Gilad was for anybody that remained. Now, that means, altogether, there were 10 portions. Each one of the daughters of Menashe got a full portion. That's how much it was, aside from the other brothers, etc. There's a lot that went up over here, and obviously they took up quite a bit of area when it went through. He goes through, the Miamalees goes through the whole conversation that Slavchad had, that Beno Slavchad had with Moshe Rabbeinu when that actually happened. There's Machlokis, what the order is over here. It seems to be order of Chachma, of how wise they were, not how old they were. Slavchad did do something wrong in the Midbar. He didn't sin in the Meraglim, he didn't sin in the Bnei Korach, but he did sin. He either was the Mekoshesh Eitzim, remember he was the one who collected the wood on Shabbos, or he was the one who was one of the Mapilim. After the Meraglim happened, he still wanted to go to Eretz Yisrael, pushed himself into Eretz Yisrael, and was killed by a Malek on the way in. He was one of the two. He sinned, and he deserved to die. But he wasn't like the other people over here, right? That's that as well. These women lived a very long time. They got married to people from Menashe. They didn't have to. They could marry anybody in Klal Yisrael, but they married Menashe, which meant the portions of Menashe remained for Shevet Menashe. They purposely married somebody within the tribe themselves. I have no idea if they had kids. It doesn't make much sense to me that they did have kids. They were much older by the time they got married, but maybe the Medrash will tell us something different, and they were zocheh to be able to have it. But there's quite a bit that's mentioned over here.
Were Puzzle they sign. Nervous yeah. that they weren't that Moshe's agreement wasn't going
to
last?
You'd have to imagine so. They were nervous that people would forget about it, or that maybe that people would say, well, we'll give you at the end. Who knows? They didn't know what they were dealing with. they trusted Yoshua, but who knows? Maybe that's why they went to Elazar first, Elazar HaKohen, just to make sure that things were going to go the way that they had planned from before. I would hope there's a lot of apples in that area, I would imagine, right, if that was it. Negba, all the way down south, Lanacho, Arima, Ilil, Ephraim, Besokar, Menashe, Gvul, Menashe, Mitzvon, Lanacho, Vayisos, Vayama, went all the way to the sea. Negba, Ephraim, Mitzvon, Menashe, to the south of Ephraim, to the north was Menashe. By Yam Gvulo, the sea, the Mediterranean Sea was the west border. Uva Asher, Yifgeun, and they hit Asher's territory, Mitzvon, all the way in the north. Beisachar, Mizrak, Yisachar, in the east. Vayim, Lanashe, Beisachar, Vayasher, Beisach, Anu, Benosav, Yivlo, Amu, Benosav, Yashe, Doro, Benosav. All those cities and their suburbs, Yoshe, Ein, Doro, Benosav, right, all these three areas, right, of these regions or whatever. Once again, Menashe wasn't able to drive out the Canaanim from certain parts of the land. They didn't drive them out, they taxed them. And once again, this was a horrible thing that happened over here. So this seems, again, there's machlokas, whether they're rebellious and they didn't drive them out on purpose, or if they specifically said, what's the big deal? We're not worried about the Canaanim anymore. They're so weak, and it was a bad call on their part over here. Everybody is blaming Ephraim for this. Menashe followed Ephraim. When Ephraim did not drive out the Canaanim and tax them instead, Menashe said, oh, you know what? I'll do that as well. The tribe of Menashe did that as well. There's a difference. Ephraim forced them to do slave labor. Menashe didn't even do that. Forced them to just give money. And that's that. That's much worse. Because the Canaanim were free to do whatever they wanted to. All they had to do is pay money over to the B'nai Menashe. That means you did not have as great of an influence on them like Ephraim did. But both of them are really, really bad. It says in Pasuk Yudal, V'yidabru B'nai Yosef Yoshua Lamor, the people of Yosef then spoke to Yoshua saying, Madun esatu linachla gorolecha v'chevelecha v'ani amrav sh'ad ko berachani Hashem. You're only giving me a small portion, but I'm a huge nation because I've been blessed by a Kadosh Baruch Hu. Now it is true, Menashe increased by almost 30,000 over the 40 years of the desert. They almost 30,000. They had a ton more people. They started off with like 22,000. They ended up with like 57,000. So when they came through, they said to Yoshua, the amount that you promised us from the very, very beginning is not sufficient for our needs right now. What we need right now is a lot more land because we have a lot more people. They said, what are we going to do over here? Some say this is not Menashe at all. It's in front of the B'nai Yosef. There were other children that Yosef had. And they had to be included in Menashe and Ephraim's portion. And those B'nai Yosef and those children that ended up leaving, they turned to the Moshe Rabbeinu and they said, and they said, this is not enough. You gave to Menashe, you gave to Ephraim, but we're a whole other Shevet. We have 30, 45, 50,000 people, however many people we have. We've got a lot of people. We have no place to go. So Yoshua looked at them and said, I don't understand this. You know, like all these future movies, they always say like, oh man, we're all going to live in these tiny little apartments or whatever it is. The land is huge and expansive. You are not worried about running out of real room. It will just expand and expand and expand. Maybe in thousands of years, we'll have used up every space on Earth and then you got a problem. But until then, don't worry about it. You're fine. So he looked at him. He said, so go to the forests. Right, obey raise the lachasham be'eretz aprizi and go, you know, take care of the land in the land of aprizi of Ephraim. Kiyotzach Ephraim, because obviously Har Ephraim is difficult for you to have. But what difference does it make? Just go to the forest and just get your own land. We're not able to. We can't go to the mountains because there's iron chariots that the Kanani have. They live in the Eretz Emek in a valley. They're so strong. They don't mind. They don't sit in the, you know, it's more strategic to be up on a mountain. They don't even care about strategy. They sit in a valley. Lasher Beveshan. Rai Beveshan Venosel. Lasher Be'emek Yisrael. Ve'yemeshuol Beis Yosef. La'Ephraim Menashe Lemor. He said to them, to Ephraim Menashe, and he said, Am Ravata. People, you're huge. You've got so many people among you. Koa Gadolach, you're really strong. You shouldn't deserve to have just one girl. Ki Har Yelach, you have a mountain. Ki Yaru, it's also a forest. Ubeiris, Beiriso. You can live in it. And you'll be able to go ahead and defeat it because I know they have those Rechav Barzel. I'm not worried about you whatsoever. Everything's going to work out well for all of you as long as you work together itself. Okay, so we already spoke about their right to complain, whether they were or not. But Yaakov, what Yoshua said to him is that you misunderstood Yaakov's blessing. You don't get extra bracha just because you're officially the Bechor. That's not why you're getting everything extra over here. You're getting a large portion, but it's equal to what everybody else is getting over here. I understand that you're more than you were than it was up there. The population is tremendously big, and I get that. But Ephraim is down. So all you have to do is split up the land a little bit differently, and you should be perfectly fine when it comes down to it. But again, he gave them two suggestions. Go live in the mountains and settle that area and the forest. That's number one. Number two, work together to drive out the Canaanim. If you work together, there is no one that's going to be able to fight you. You're going to be perfectly fine whatsoever. So he told them, be confident. Why do you think HaKadosh Baruch Hu is not going to help you with this? Number two, you have the strength of a re'aim and a shor. That was the bracha given over to Yosef Etzadi. You have the power of a bull. You have the power of the rhinoceros. You can do whatever you want, or a unicorn, whatever you want to call it. We have the power to do whatever you want. Just gore them and take them out completely. Aside from that, you're in mountains. How are iron chariots going to help the Canaanim when you're in mountains? It's not going to help them at all. You can't use those iron chariots in the mountains that you're talking about. So he's like, Mimanafshach. If you're worried about the iron chariots, then it's grassland, when there's enough land for everybody. If it's mountains, right, and there's not enough land for everybody, then don't worry about the iron chariots. So calm down. That's what he said to him over there, right? And that's that. He also told him, you don't have to worry about the evil eye either. No ayin hara. In mountains and in the sea, there's no issue of the ayin hara. He told him, Yosef was famous that they didn't have to worry about the ayin hara. He was telling him, no worries over here. Wait, don't worry about anything. Yeah.
Can we talk about this 13th tribe?
Yeah.
Where did that come from?
The 13th tribe of Bnei Yosef?
Yeah.
It's not like a full tribe. There were just extra people from Bnei Yosef that joined in with Menashe and Ephraim at some point.
They were Jewish.
They were for sure Jewish. They were all from either Osnas or from other Jewish women that Yosef HaTzadik was willing to marry. But they were 100% Jewish. But they were from Yosef HaTzadik after he gave birth to Ephraim and Menashe. Just think about it. I mean, if we look at all the Shvatim that are out there, yes, there were some of them that are pretty obvious, but isn't it strange that we only have like a few kids by each one of the Shvatim, like Dun only at Hushim? I mean, come on. For sure there were more people in Shevet Dun. We're just mentioning one son who represents many of the other sons out there. So Yosef as well. Yosef was a king for 80 years in Mitzrayim. He lived to 110 and he became king at the age of 30. You think he only had one wife? Is that what kings do back then? He probably had 1,000 wives. Hopefully all of them Jewish. And the kids joined Bnei Ephraim and Bnei Menashe. The assumption is that he had quite a bit of kids. Quite a few of them. Okay, Perek Yudches, guys. Let's see over here. Vayikualu kol ha'ida. Vayikualu kol ha'das b'nei Yisrael Shiloh. So all of Adas b'nei Yisrael, they gathered at Shiloh. Vayashkinu shamas ol moed. They put there the ol moed. Va'aretz nichba shalofneim. While the land had been conquered in front of them. The Mishkan was always meant to become somewhat permanent. Meaning, it was going to be temporary while they're in the Midbar. And when they came there, Yisrael, before the Beis HaMikdash would be built, it was going to be permanent up until that point. So when they made it permanent, they changed a couple things. Instead of having bars around all the kalim so they could carry them, they took out the bars. No need for them. The Arun Kodesh kept the bars, but everything else, no need for the bars themselves. Instead of what they had was krushim, those beams, right, surrounded by silver-plated beams that were in sockets, gold-plated beams that were in silver sockets, right? They said, we don't need that anymore. So what do? They took those down and they made real walls instead, actual cement and brick and stone walls. They went ahead and did that. They opened the chatzar. No longer was like sheets that were stretched out against a bunch of things. They didn't need that. They changed everything completely.
It was the same dimensions though, right?
No, the Mizbeach was much, much bigger because they had to have animals on top of there. So in the Midbar, it was like 2.5 by 5, etc. Now it was like 20 by 20. In the Beis HaMikdash, it was 32 by 32 amos, right? So 30 by 50 by 50 feet, give or take about the size of the shul. That would have been the size of the Mizbeach itself, right? Around 50 by 50 feet. And not easy, definitely not easy. And they understood it. So they carried everything in with them. They did everything. And they felt that the land was conquered. So in Pasuk Beis, guys, Vayivasru b'Bnei Yisrael, there remained among B'nai Yisrael shalokol kolos nachalosim shiva shvatim that had not received their portions yet. Well, we got 7 shvatim. We've done a couple of the shvatim already, but we're missing 7. Reuven and Gad got their portion. Ephraim and Menashe got their portion. Yehuda got their portion. That we know. The 5 of them got their portion over there. There are another 7 Shvatim, not including Levi, obviously, who did not get their portion yet. So what do we do with these other seven Shabbatim? How long are you going to be lazy and not drive out the people in the land that God has given you? Take three men per shevet. I'm going to send them out. They'll walk through the land. They'll write it down according to what the nachlos are going to be like and bring it to me so that we know how they divide up the land. So these people were surveyors. Three people per shevet, seven shvatim left, so 21 people altogether. They would go out, survey the different lands, and bring it back and say, here's what we want. Right, here's the division of the rest of the land. They split up into seven chalakim. Yehuda, Yamal, Gvula, Mineged. Yehuda, what Mineged? He'll be in the south. Yot, Bnei Yosef, Yamal, Gvula, Mitzapon. They'll be on top of Yehuda in the north. Vatam Tiktivu is Aris Shiva Chalakim, and then you'll divide up the rest of the land in seven parts. Vavesim Eli, bring it to me. Vinevi Hena here. Vyarisalacham Goral Po, and then I'll make a goral for Hashem, and that's the cool part. First, tell me what you want. And then I'll make a goral, and it'll assure that what you want will actually be given to you. That's the lottery. That's pretty good, right? It's not like a regular. That would be like saying, okay, $750 million lottery tonight. Yaakov Lowe is going to win. Let's pick it out. Up, oh, Yaakov Lowe. Sort of like the NBA lottery, which we all know is completely fixed.
Hmm? Don't forget about it.
Well, it's tomorrow, isn't it?
But what numbers am I going to pick?
7, 21, 42. 13,
write it down.
15, 17. Is it 750 million?
That's okay.
Hey, it's more than that, I think.
Really?
Yeah, did anybody win on Sunday?
No.
Oh, so you're dealing with almost a billion. It's probably 1.1 billion again. Yeah, it's better that way. So you should go for it. Maybe it's a little bit, I don't know. I haven't paid attention. I bought one lottery ticket the last time I went up to 1.3 billion, and guess what?
You didn't win.
No, I did not.
Did you get your money back?
I asked. I had no idea though you're supposed to pay with cash. I had no idea. Like, I paid with credit card, and the guy's like, "You can't do that." I'm like, "All right, first time I've ever done it. I'm really sorry, buddy." But I didn't win, so it didn't matter. Vis, and then I canceled the credit card payment. Vis chalku so l'shiva chalakim yudi. No, I'm joking. Yamar gula mi cell phone. Batem tiktivu so arshiva chalakim avisu meilavi ne yirisi lacham goro l'vena. Ki ein chelak levim bekerachan. There was no chelak among the levim among you. Ki kunas Hashem nachlasoi, because the priesthood of Hakadosh Baruch Hu, that is their inheritance. The God Reuven chatz shiva menashe lachu nachlas neivri liard in mizracha. Reuven, Gad, half Shevet and Menashe, they took their Nachla on the other side of the Jordan River, the east side, that Moshe, the Eved of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, had given to them. Everything was going to be over there. Now, again, Yoshua had to remind them, guys, we're fighting together. This is not separate fights. This is not you do your thing, you do your thing, you do your thing. Everybody's going to do something together. Don't be content with what you have and say, oh, I don't need to fight anymore. I'm good with the land that I got. Everyone is still fighting until we finish everything whatsoever. So those three judges were guaranteed that they were going to go through the land. And even though there were many enemies around, they would not have to worry about anything. The land would be given to them. There was nothing to worry about. They would all come back. All 21 men were completely allowed to do whatever they wanted. They were going to come back. So in Pasuk Ches, the men got up. And they left. He commanded the people that went away to write down the land, saying, go walk through the land. So write it down. Then come back to me. And then I'll make a girl for you at Shiloh. And they passed through the land. And they wrote down all the cities into seven different parts. I'll say for by a book. And after they wrote it down, Yoshua made a goral for Hashem in Shiloh, and he divided up according to whatever they needed right over here. So he gave them everything they had. So I have whatever. We have everything right here. Pasuk Yud Aleph. The first of the last seven Shvatim to get their part was Binyamin. Their goral went in between Yehuda and Yosef. Over here. In between Yehuda in the south and Yosef in the north. Their chelik was right there. Included in Binyamin's chelik was Yerushalayim. They didn't drive anybody out yet, but they took that. By Yericho in the north. To the south he base El. Went to the south, went all the way to Kiryas Yarin, which is where Neve is now. Toward the west. to the south, Mixek, here's your army, Yatzak, Vul, Yamav, Yatzal, Mayimayav Toach, went all the way to Mainav Toach. Right? It says, Vyardig, Vul, Kseahar, went down by the side of the mountain, Ashraf, and Abigay, Ben Hinom, right by the valley of Ben Hinom. You know where that is nowadays, right? Gay Ben Hinom is right outside of the old city. That's that area. That's where they used to do Molech, right over there. And it says, Shabbat Emek Rephaim, Tzafona, right by Emek Rephaim. It is, right? Because Emek Rephaim is that street right by there. Mamish, right by Gay Ben Hinom. Tzafona, right by the north. The Yorid Gay Anom El Ket. I'm sorry? I don't know how many are kosher. But if there are, they are, they should be good. They look pretty good. The Yorid Gay Anom El Ket of Yavuzi went down to the edge of the Yavuzi Negbav Yorid Ein Roga, went to Ein Roga, Vatorim, Tzafon, Yotza Ein Shemesh, Yotza Gulus, Asher Nechach, Male Adumim. It went to the springs right opposite Male Adumim. Yorid Evan Boan Ben Ruven. It went all the way down to Evan Boan. The Avara Kesamullah Rav Tzafon of Yorid Aravasa. It went to the wilderness. The Avara Gvul Kesaves Chagla, Tzafon of Yototos Vagvul Lashon Yom Melach. Went all the way to the salt sea, Tzafona, to the north, Al-Ketzeh Yard, into the edge of the Jordan River. Negba, to the south, Zegvul Negev. That was the southern border of Yarden. Yigbalo Solifas Kedma, Zois Nachlos Ben Amiram. That became the east, the Jordan River. This was Nachlos Ben Amiram, Ligvulo Sosiv, Lemeshachosim, Vayula Arim, Ha'arim, Lamati Ben Amiram, Lemeshachosim, Yericho, Beis Chagla, Ve'emek Kitzitz. So here's what they had over here. They had Yericho, Beis Chagla, Emek, and Kitzitz. Emek Kitzitz, I should say. Beis Ha'arava, Tumarayim, Beis El, Ha'avim, Va'parav, Ha'opra, Kfar Ha'omni, Amani, right, Ba'afni, Ba'gava, Arim, Shtemis, Rebekatran, that's 12 cities. Then we have Givon, Ramah, Be'eros, Mitzbah, Kfira, Motza, Rekem, Yerpa'el, and Sarala, Tsela, Ha'aleph, Vayavusi, Yerushalayim, Givas, Kiras, Arim, right, Arbes, Rebekatran, there were 14 altogether, Zenachs, Ben Amin, Amin, Shachosam. That was everything that they needed over here. Very good, guys. Binyamin got a very special part. The reason why they want to mention first is because he got special brachas from Yaakov Avinu, obviously being the child of Rachel Avinu herself, and therefore it's all there. There was a machlokas, where to put the Beis HaMikdash. Shola Melech Paskin, it should be in the highest mountain in Eretz Yisrael, highest physical mountain. The highest physical mountain in Eretz Yisrael is in Shevet Binyamin somewhere. So he said it should be there. David Melech argued it's not the highest physical point, it's the highest spiritual point. That is to be Haram Moriah. That was their actual machlokas right over there. I'm sorry?
The highest mountain in Israel is technically in Eilat.
Not biblical Israel. Is it really though?
Yeah.
Not Hermon?
No, I don't even count the Hermon. But I think elevation wise.
Oh, because
the Hermon wasn't, I mean.
From top to bottom, what's the highest mountain? Because, you know, you could define that in many different ways. Like, the biggest mountain in the world is what mountain?
Mount Everest.
No.
No. There's one in India or something. That's
no. The highest on land is Mount Everest, and you're correct.
You're talking about
the highest mountain is in the ocean by the Mariana Trench.
Get out of here.
It's known as a mountain. It's in the Guinness Book of World Records. Highest mountain.
Tallest mountain in Israel is the Hermon right now.
The Hermon. Yeah, that makes sense. But is that, maybe that's Lebanon back in the day? I don't know. Yeah. I don't know what that would be. Although Har Hermon does appear in the Navi itself.
Look in the So you know, which is the highest mountain, one more time?
Not Mount Everest. It's something in the middle of the Mariana Trench. Right around there. It's something in the middle of the ocean. It's the highest mountain in the world. But yes, okay, fine. What was I going to say? The Chassam Sofer has an unbelievable piece on this. He says, how could we possibly say that Har Moriah is the highest mountain in Eretz Yisrael? It's not. It's not. So you could say it's spiritual. It's possible. You said, but I got a better shot. Do you mind passing me that plastic right over there, right behind the Sprite? Thank you very much. Here, this is what he says. He says, if you would take a ball, right, is there a top to a round ball?
No.
Of course not, right? There's no top to a round ball. But there is if there's something on top that's really important. We all know the Beis HaMikdash is opposite the Beis HaMikdash Lamala, right? There's a Beis HaMikdash down on earth and opposite the Beis HaMikdash Lamala. Well, that's the top. Which means the circle that we have, the top is where the Beis HaMikdash is. That's supposed to be the top itself. If you look at this ball right over here, let's say there's a mountain that's really tall, like Mount Everest right over here, right? And that's the tallest mountain in the world. But it's not, because the tallest is the topmost point that's opposite the Beis HaMikdash Lamala. See, even though that's really, really tall, but it's going that way, it's not taller than the Har Moriah itself, which is the highest point because of the Mishkan that's right above it, the Beis HaMikdash that's right above it. Isn't that a cool little idea? So he says, based on a ball, you'll always know which one it is. All right, let's do one more parak, guys, and we'll stop with that. I think we have enough time to be able to do it. Yeah? Yeah, we should be perfectly fine. Let's go. So it says, Vayetza Goral Hasheni L'Shimon. Second Goral went out. Right? So again, we have seven Gorolos. First one went to Binyamin, second one went to Shimon. Lamata Ben Shimon, Lubishkos, Vayi Nachalos, and Besok Nachalos, Ben Yehuda. Their Nachalos was cities within the area of Yehuda. All spread out within Yehuda itself. Because again, if you look at Yehuda, Yehuda had this huge area right over there. Shimon was all around Yehuda itself. They did not have land. They had specific cities that were inside there. Vayilam ben Achlosim be'er Sheva, v'Sheva, u'molada. They got Be'er Sheva, Sheva, and Molada. Chatzar Shul, Balava Etzem. El Tolad, Besul, v'Chorma. Tziklag, Beis HaMarkavos, Chatzar Susa. Beis HaVaos, Sharuchen. Arim Shlosh Zrei v'Chatzarayin, 13 altogether. I don't know what I missed over here. I counted 14 altogether. Ayin Rimon, Eser, and Ashan, Arim Arba v'Chatzarayin. Ayin Rimon, Eser, and Ashan is four cities altogether. V'chol HaChatzarim, Shesviyos Arim. You have all the fields around the cities. Ayila Ad Balas Ber Ramoit, Ramas, I should say Negev, to the south. Zos Nachlam B'nai Matav B'nai Shem L'Ish. That was the Nachla of the Shevet of Shimon. Mechevo B'nai Yehuda Nachlam B'nai Shimon. Right from the portion of Yehuda, that's where Nachla B'nai Shimon went. Ki Achila B'nai Yehuda Met Rav Me'em. Because Yehuda's portion was so huge, it was too much for them to handle. Shimon ended up going within this area as well. Okay, really, the truth is, there were two lands given over to Shimon. Number one was the cities within Yehuda, so that his land, Yehuda's land wasn't desolate. So it was like a bracha that Yehuda got extra people inside there because otherwise would be there. There was a little bit of land that was given to Shimon as well. Not just cities, but actual land. But that is a different issue, and it's something that's not mentioned directly inside the Navi itself. The reason why they didn't get any real land directly mentioned in the Navi is for two reasons. Number one, because what happened at Shittim, that was with Zimri ben Zinsalu when he slept with Cusby, right in front of all Bnei Yisrael, that he got punished for. Number two, because Shimon went into Shechem and destroyed all of Shechem along with his brother Levi. The fact that he did that, he did not deserve to have an actual piece of land. Yaakovino cursed them, they should be scattered. Afitzem b'Yaakov, right? I'm going to scatter them throughout Yaakov. They did not get anything right over there. Remember, this is a tremendous lesson. Your deeds affect not only yourself, but the people around you, and especially your kids. Anything you do will affect them as people themselves. We cannot take the effects of our actions very lightly. We have to do everything we can. Pasuk Yud, guys, it says, Vayal HaGorol HaShlish Levenei Zvulun. The third lot came up for the people of Zvulun. By their families. The Gvul went all the way to Sarid. But Allah went all the way to the west. Umar Allah, right, all the way to Mar Allah. And it also went all the way to the river that was by Yaqna'am. Bishav Misarid Kedma Mizrach HaShemesh. And it went from Sarid all the way to the east. Ad Gvul Al Gvul Kislois Tavor. Viatol Adavras Allah Yafia. Went to those areas as well. Misham Avar Kedma Mizrach went to the east. Gita, Khafer, Ita, Katsin, Viatar Rimon, Hamator Anea. Okay. Then it was all Gvul Mitzvon. It went to the north. Chanasin. It hit Tavor. The what does that say? Shacht Samavas? Shechatzima, Ubeit Shemesh, along with Beit Shemesh. I think we all understand that. Vayu toitzos of Gvulos Yardin Arum Sheshrev Yachatran. There were 16 of them altogether. There was Nachas B'nei Yisachar and Mishmachosam, Ha'arim, the Chatran. They had cities as well as the villages themselves. Now, again, guys, it happens to be the reason why Yisachar and Zvulun are put together and there's no separation in the parshas, simply put, because they were always together. Zvulun paid for Yisachar to learn. Yisachar had a lot of fruits that Zvulun took care of, right? It seems to be that there was really that connection between them that was unbelievable. Both of these tribes were known for their humility, that even though Zvulun was extremely wealthy and Yisachar was extremely wise, neither one of them became arrogant. They understood over here what they had to do. So there's a mashal given of a land where humility was prized above all else. Even the king himself would never make a decision without consulting his court and all of his nobles. He would never do anything on his own because he was too humble to do so. He would even ask the advice of his servants in order to ask what they had. He wanted to set a good example for the whole kingdom. One day he sent some of his servants to the wilderness to bring back some savages that were living in the middle of the forest. He reasoned that if he would raise them from their state of ignorance and nakedness, right, they would become exceptionally humble like him. If he could figure it out, then they would be able to do it. He gave them fine clothes. He found those guys, brought them in, taught them how to act, gave them fine clothes and high positions in the court, and told them that it's all being given to you because of your great anivus. They soon forgot everything whatsoever. They became accustomed to the great honor they were being shown. They became haughty. They became arrogant. When the king saw this, he was disappointed. He said, I gave you a gift. Why in the world are you being haughty about it? You didn't deserve this. You didn't do anything to get it. This is what I gave you over here. I can't believe that you're educated and you know better and you're still doing it. You have no excuse. The king had them stripped of their clothes and all of them were beaten and then brought back to the forest and left naked inside the forest. Yeah, great mashal at the end of the day, right? But the idea is that humility is something that obviously everybody has to learn, that when a person gets exceedingly wealthy or has stuff that they never had before, typically speaking, they get a little bit, they turn into little bits of braggarts, whatever it is. They shouldn't deal with such things. Pasuk Chaf Dalet. Then they had Asher. The fifth one went to Asher. So again, we have Binyamin, then Shimon, then Zvulun, Yisachar, and then finally Asher. It says, "Vayigvulam chelkas chali v'vatim v'achshav v'alemech v'am od mishol ufaga b'karmel hayama." By the west side, they hit the Carmel. Ubeshichur libnos v'shav mizrach shav beis Dagon, right by beis Dagon. That is where one of the Plishim used to celebrate Dagon. Paga b'zvulam ubege yiftach el. Went to Kvul on the left side. The Evron, Rechov, the Chamoin, the Kana, Atzin, Rabba, all the way to Tzin, Rabba, Shavagul, Rama, went to Ramba, Adir, Miv, Tzartzor, Shavagul, Choyso, Vayvayu, Totsoso, Vayama, Mechavalach, Ziva. The Uma, the Afik, Urechov, Arim, Rechov, I'm sorry. Arim, Esrim, Mishnaim, Vachazrain, there's 22 altogether. Zosan, Chazrain, Yashem, Mishnachosam, Arim, Eil, Vachazrain, Livnei, Naphtali, Yotor, Goral, Shish, Livnei, Naphtali, Mishnachosam. Naphtali got the sixth one. Right, and Naphtali had, according to their families, all the way to the Jordan River. On the west side was Asher, on the east side was Zvulun. Right, so it's on the south. I'm sorry, was Zvulun. They had all the area around the Kinneret, the awesomest fruits that you can imagine. Now, Asher had the best fruits and the best olive groves, etc. Arim, 19 altogether. I do not believe it's the Beit Shemesh that we know and love. By Tel Aviv, a different type of Beit Shemesh. That's what it refers to over here. They had all of that stuff. Now, Ginusar was an area that was extremely rich and fertile, right by the Kinneret River. And back in the day when the Kinneret was overflowing, the Jordan River was there, and the rain was happening at the right time, the fruits that were from there were the most awesome fruits out there. It was so sweet that Rabbi Yochanan said, when they had 100 people, everybody got 10 fruits. When there were only 10 people, each one got 100. 100 fruits ended up filling a bushel basket. It was so sweet and delicious, they kept eating and eating as if it's there. It kind of reminds me of what happens by kangaroos. Did you know that depending on whether there's enough rain and food in the fields, kangaroos will have less or more children because of it? If there's dry seasons and they know it's going to be dry and there won't be enough food, they just don't have kids. It's like they have internal birth control. And if there's a lot of stuff and they know there's going to be a lot of growth and stuff like that, then the kangaroos have more kangaroos. It's sort of like this over here. The fruit grew when they needed it, right? And when it didn't need to, they kept it as it was. Rabba Baravo ate so much that flies were sliding off of his forehead from all the oil from the fruits. Rebbe Ami, I think it was like a teenager almost. It's like sweetness, you know, like all that, like juices, everything. Rabbi Amr Rabiasi ate so much that their hair started to fall out. And Rabbi Shimon ben Lakish ate just a little and it made him drunk. It's unbelievable. This type of stuff, it was like the sweetest fruits in the world. The only thing that come anywhere near it are these crazy pears that I had once. They're literally the greatest pears I've ever had in my life from South America. Unbelievable stuff. Regardless, that is that. That's the idea behind it. Naphtali is mentioned twice over here because the portion that they received was the desire of every tribe. The fruits that they had there. It was a lot of work because they had to do a lot of stuff over here, but they got that as well. Similarly, by the way, they probably had the hot springs of Tiberias as well. most likely they got it. Might have been given to another tribe, but most likely Asher might have gotten it right over everybody else, which is pretty awesome. It could have been Asher, but not, most likely it was Naphtali. Not to be done, let me suppose them. Done, their families, Yotza Gor Al Shvi, they got the seventh lottery. Sha'alabin, that is Shalvin, right? The famous Shalvin. V'ay alone. This is done, yeah. Pasuk Mem Beis. V'elon v'tim nasa v'akron v'elteka v'gibson v'balos v'yehud. Yehud, right? I don't even know what that name is. Bnei Brak, the actual Bnei Brak that you know and love, and Gas Rimon, Mea Yarkon, Varakon, Ima Gavul, Mul Yafo, right opposite of Yafo, right, obviously Tel Aviv as well, but Yitzhak Gavul, Bnei Don, Mehem, Viala Bnei Don went a little further, because they knew that wasn't enough for them, they climbed up, Yalachamu and Lashem, they fought with Lashem, but Yukadu Osan, they captured it, Yaakov Solvichar, and they captured it by the sword, Yishu said they drove it out, Yishu Ban, they lived in it, Yikul Lashem, done, Kshem Den Aviyam, they called it done. After their fathers, they got all of that area right over there. Now, why is Leshem considered separate from all the other portions of Dun itself? There's a bunch of different answers over here. Now, some say Leshem was part of the portion that Dun received in the lottery, but they did not conquer it until much, much later on. And therefore, it's mentioned separately because it wasn't conquered with the rest of the stuff. It was only much later. That was when? During the times of the judges. By the times of Micha. Remember that whole story at the end of Shoftim? When Shevet Dun is moving to go find extra land? That's when they took Leshem. It was not immediate, it happened later on. Others say Leshem was not part of the original plan for Eretz Yisrael. When Dun became too many and they went and they conquered a land that was outside of Eretz Yisrael, they conquered Leshem and added it to Eretz Yisrael. That's what they ended up doing over there. They expanded when it came down to there. Some say they had conquered Leshem not because their territory was too small, but because they wanted to expand. They felt that they wanted a nicer location, and therefore they just went beyond their needs, and that was that. Either way, that was Leshem. They turned it into Dun. The area is called the Banyas. You know where the Banyas are? You ever gone there? No. Banyas is like the area of a big spring that supposedly starts the Jordan River. And that area is supposed to be Dun's area. That's why the Yarden River, the Jordan River, is called Yorad Midun. It comes down from the area that was given to Dun. That's where the Jordan River comes from. Pasuk Mem Tes, guys, it says, Vayechalu Linchos Aretz, they finished distributing the land, Likvilos Elkon of their border, Vayinu B'nei Yisrael Nachalo Yoshua Ben Nun B'Sochem, and then they gave land to Yoshua Ben Nun. Al Pi Hashem Nasalos E'ir Shashol. Through the word of Hashem, they gave him the city they asked for, Timnas Serach, Bahar Ephraim. It was the land called Timnas Serach. Now, Serach is not a good name. It means it was rotten. But even as Eir Ve'eshabah, he built up the city and lived there. Eilah Nachalos Asher Nachlo Elazar Kohen Yeshua Ben Nun Barashia. Avos Lamatzos Ben Yisrael Begoro B'Shilo Lifnei Hashem. These are the Nachlos that Elazar Kohen Yeshua Ben Nun and all the heads of the fathers of all the families and the tribes did by a lottery in Shiloh in front of HaKadosh Baruch Hu Pesach Ha'Moed Ve'echalom Echalak His Arutz, and they stopped dividing up the land. Now look, he didn't take his portion without asking permission first. But Yeshua went there. The fruit was as dry as pottery. It was disgusting stuff and all there. With Yeshua, they became so fat and juicy. Once he moved there, they became sarach. The reason why sarach is they became putrid because they were so juicy, you couldn't eat enough of them, and they just sat there rotting in the sun because there were so many fruits out there. Others say that no, it was called that because the fruits were very juicy and they spoiled really quickly and started to stink. But then they dried up and became even better by Yeshua. So it was the opposite. And therefore it was called Cheres because of the pottery that went in there. Yeshua chose a city because no one else wanted it. He didn't take the best city out there. He took a city that no one else wanted and he cultivated it. He improved it and he turned it into an awesome, awesome place over there. He rebuilt it all for himself, by himself. Some say it was a small, isolated city right by the mountains itself. Others say it was an area that Elkanah later lived in with Shmuel and Avi. Many Nevi'im lived in this area because apparently it was an area that was very isolated and it was proper for his bodidus for them to be able to go together. Some say that there was a monument there with a picture of the sun that had been erected as Yoshua's grave and that it still exists today like that. That's based on a Mesorah that we have, but I'm sorry? Yeah, I don't think a full sun because you can't draw a full sun, so it must be like half a sun or something like that. He was supposed to reflect the sun, the sunlight. That's why he's called the moon. He was supposed to reflect all of that light. We'll stop with that, guys. We're on Perek Chaf Shkoyach, everybody.